that marked his quarry. Lydran raced along a broad processional, gaining upon his quarry. Magnificent spire towers rose on either side of him, Aquila's and clan emblems fluttering proudly on pennants that flew from their glittering peaks. Beautifully worked lumen poles and actual living trees lined the walkways to either side of the processional, while its central reservation was dotted with marble statues that whipped past in a blur. The first moments upon leaving the spaceport had been a trial of patience for Lydran, as the great and good of High Evangelicus scattered before him in panic. He had been forced to weave through gaggles of wailing clergy and adepts, swerve around mechanical walking litters, whose opulently clad passengers gaped at him in dumbfounded shock, and try to avoid running down dozens of minor dignitaries, mining clan nobles, bellowing Arbites, and assorted others. Even upon reaching the processionals, where foot and vehicular traffic was blessedly segregated by shimmering energy barriers, Lydran was forced to jink left and right to avoid expensive-looking ground cars, crawler barks, and the armoured transports of the Hive Arbites. Then air raid hymnals had begun to blare from gilded Lord Hailers, and in response, the herds of Hive Angelicus had scattered for shelter. Whoever had given that order, Lydran made a mental note to commend them later. His frustration had grown as he saw the Crimson Rune pulling away from him and into the fringes of the spire core. Now, with the processionals clearing by the moment, he was able to open his armoured steed up and streak along his enemy's trail like a bullet. Lydran leaned forward over the bike's handlebars, minimising his bulky silhouette as much as he could to lessen drag. He passed through a tunnel that took the processional beneath a towering cathedrum, arc lumen strobing overhead as he sped down its length. Frescoes of imperial heroes and mighty victories covered the tunnel's walls, but their artistry was lost to him in the blur of his speed. Lydran burst from the tunnel between a pair of towering statues of St. Calippus, wove his bike between several ornate ground cars, whose occupants stared at him as he shot past, and then followed the rune down a sweeping ramp and onto a lower processional. The blinking rune was dead ahead now, beyond the next intersection and back up a sweeping spiral onto a higher carriageway. He should see his quarry in moments.
"Assault Force Primus! Contact with insurgent cell!"
came Chaplain Storm's voice over the command channel. The hard bang of bolters and the rattle of autoguns could be heard behind his transmission.
"Assault Force Tertian, contact at abandoned hangar also," reported Champion Hastor. "Caution, brothers! The foe here were few, but entry to the structure triggered multiple traps. Several battle brothers compromised, 17 Gyrish dead or wounded. Cowardly heretic filth!"
Two of the three sites confirmed, thought Lydran, not to mention the audacious strike at Captain Tor. Just how far had the rot of this cult spread? His bike left the ground as he reached the crest of the spiral ramp, his armoured tyres slamming back down on ferrocrete and propelling him forward again.
"Visual contact with sniper at these coordinates," he reported over the command channel,
then thumbed the arming runes of his bike's twin bolt rifles in readiness. The sniper vanished for a moment as they wove around a racing mass transporter. As they emerged again into his field of vision, the librarian had an unobstructed view of his prey at last. She rode a lightweight model of motorbike with bulky suspension and what appeared to be custom modifications to its engine. A fragment of the information Lydran had inloaded about Gaia told him that these vehicles were predominantly used by the lesser mining clans as a swift, if not especially safe, method of traversing the jungle roadways. The garb she wore also resembled a miner's utility suit, vulcanized and hung with clip harnesses and webbing. However, he noted that a number of flak plates had been attached to it, in order to transform workers' clothing into something altogether more resistant to weapon spirits' wrath. Strapped across her back was a long-snouted sniper rifle of a configuration that Lydran didn't recognise, the weapon that took Captain Tor's life. The sight of it sent a fresh wave of loathing rolling through him, though at himself or the assassin, he couldn't tell. Lips curling back into a snarl, Lydron squeezed the bike's throttle and goaded more speed out of his steed. He bent his geokinetic powers to aid him, fashioning a sweeping prow of kinetic force before the bike to part the air and allow it to leap forward all the swifter. The sniper's goggles flashed with reflected sunlight as she shot a glance back at him. Then she hunched over the handlebars and concentrated on the processional ahead. Muttering a benediction to the weapon's machine spirits, Lydron pressed the triggers built into his bike's handlebars and sent a volley of bolt shells whipping towards the sniper. She swerved past, a silvery ground car, her reactions remarkable in an unaugmented human, and the bolts rocketed over her shoulder harmlessly. The manoeuvre had cost her speed, though, and Lydron found himself drawing closer still. He marshalled a portion of his powers, intending to tear up a section of the ferrocrete roadway before his quarry and cause her to collide with it at killing speed. Yet Lydron felt a tingle in the back of his mind, the telltale whisper of silk across his senses that warned him of another psyker's mind at work. He snarled. The sniper glanced back again, as though forewarned of his plans. Taking one hand from the handlebars, she grabbed something bulky from a satchel at her side, thumbed a switch, and then deftly let the object fall in her wake. Lydron registered the flashing warning runes and las-sealed canister cells of the mining charge as it bounced towards him. He threw his bike into a hard swerve and poured the empiric energies he had marshalled into throwing up a kinetic barrier between himself and the explosion. The charge detonated with a ferocious force. Fire licked at Lydron's armour and the flank of his bike. Wickering ferrocrete shrapnel pinged from his shoulder guard, while the battering ram shockwave of the explosion threatened to pitch him from the saddle, if he hadn't raised his shield when he had. The librarian hung on to the handlebars and kept his steed level. Behind him, he heard the howl of brakes and the terrible impacts as drivers of haulers and ground cars failed to evade the blast. Ahead, the sniper had pulled away again, though she had to know her lead was only temporary. The processional curved lazily to the left, and Lydron leaned into the bend, flashing past another lumbering hauler and gaining on his prey. They were climbing steadily now, curving around the flanks of the immense administratum offices that rose like a mountain of stone and plasteel to loom over the spire core. "Brother librarian, be warned, the processional fractures ahead," came Shipmaster Gavorn's voice over the vox. "There is a transit shrine with several dozen interlinked roadways, many proceeding downhive into level Primus and the Commercius district." If his quarry was able to lose herself amidst the tangle ahead, it was possible she could shake the shipmaster's orbital surveillance and Lydron's pursuit at a stroke. The librarian thought fast.
"Gavorn! Contact the Arbites Precinct Fortress and command them to shut down the transit shrine," he ordered. "Have them rouse all servitor guns and forbid passage to all."
"At once, Brother Librarian," replied the shipmaster.
There would be resistance to the command, Lydron knew. Even in the midst of a war of insurgency, even at the command of the Emperor's own Adeptus Astartes, the lawmakers of this world would hesitate at the notion of curtailing movement into and out of the prestigious Hive Spire. There would be outrage, and, quite possibly, civilian casualties, as the servo guns activated. At that moment, he did not care, so long as the Arbites followed his order and prevented Tor's killer from slipping away. The processional swept over a gilded bridge beneath which a man-made chasm of structures dropped away into hazy gloom. The map in Lydron's autosenses told him that the roadway would drop down between the Cathedrum Sanctificate and the Shrine to St. Maticula in less than a mile, and thence feed into the gaping throat of the transit shrine. He was gaining on his prey again, the two of them weaving in and out of slower-moving vehicles so closely that the collision warning chimes in Lydron's autosensors had become a constant drone. The mass of vehicles made it near impossible for him to employ his powers, at least not without triggering mayhem that might as easily work in his prey's favour as his. Lydron wasn't closing quickly enough, though. If the local authorities were going to obey his command, it had to be now.
The librarian felt a stab of triumph as warning runes lit up on hollow boards flanking the processional. Skeletal servitors built into the bridge's superstructure unfolded mechanical limbs, their ocular lumen flashing red as their stubber arrays armed. A blaring voice echoed from cherubim and the voxponders of hovering servo skulls.
"Citizenry, by command of the Adeptus Arbites and in the Emperor's holy name, prohibum immediate. Render your vehicular machine spirits quiescent and await further illumination."
The booming message repeated again and again. Cowed by the threat of the servitor guns and a lifetime of indoctrinated obedience, the drivers of the ground cars and cargo haulers slowed. And, as they did so, the flow of vehicular traffic thickened like blood clotting in an artery. Lydran pushed his bike between two ground cars, its armoured cowling striking sparks from the vehicles as it shouldered them aside. He gave the two vehicles a nudge with his powers, causing them to skid sideways away from him and thump heavily into the transports to either side. Ahead, he saw his quarry skid as a macro transporter rumbled to a halt directly in her path. She managed to slide into the vehicle's rear side on, but still the sudden impact was violent enough to spill her from her saddle. The sniper vanished as the ground car behind her skidded to a halt, and for a moment, Lydran feared his quarry had met an unsatisfying end beneath the vehicle's wheels. Unable to force his bike further through the press of traffic, the librarian muttered a swift benediction to render his steed's machine spirit quiescent, then brought it to a halt and jumped from the saddle onto the ground car before him. His booted feet left deep indents in the vehicle's roof as he crossed it in a stride and leapt to the machine ahead of it. He bounded again with servo-assisted strength and caught hold of the crawl handles on the side of a Prometheum tanker. Lydran pulled himself up onto the hulking vehicle's spine and ran along its length. He kept part of his attention on the roused servitor guns, whose barrels were tracking his motion, as though unsure whether he was a threat to be fired upon. "There," he thought, as he saw movement to his left. She was still on the move, scrambling out from beneath another ground car like an arachnid, spinning and... The crack of the sniper's rifle sounded loud, even over the rumble of dozens of engines. The shot was rushed, but still it hit Lydran in his midriff, hard enough that it felt as though someone had swung a thunderhammer into his gut. The librarian grunted in pain, and, grasping for the energies of the immaterium, hurled a blast of raw geokinetic force back at her. Ground car windows shattered and exploded. Cracks raced through the ferrocrete, and the sniper flung herself desperately aside as the patch of roadway where she knelt erupted like a geyser of stone. There came a cacophony of Beinharic shrieks, and the servitor guns opened fire. Some directed hails of bullets toward the cultist. Some chose Lydran as their target, and impacts rang from his Mark 10 armor. Shots punched into stationary vehicles as they flew wide of their targets. View screens crazed with cracks and were misted red by sudden sprays of gore as the occupants were hit. Lydran dropped from the flank of the Prometheum tanker, lest the mindless gun servitors trigger an explosive fireball. To his amazement, he saw that the sniper was still up, running hard for the edge of the bridge. Puffs of ferrocrete dust chased her heels as the gun servitors followed her motion. Amidst the cacophony of gunfire and screams, Lydran breathed a word of denial and amazement. "No." The sniper reached the edge of the bridge and, without so much as breaking a stride, launched herself into space. Lydran followed her, pounding across the intervening gap, bullets whining from his armour. He threw himself from the brink and saw his prey below him, her descent slowed by a crude grav-chute module that sparked and glowed at her belt. Her sniper rifle still clutched awkwardly in one hand as she attempted to lean in the direction of the lip of the artificial canyon. Soaring like a wounded petra squirrel, the sniper cleared the brink and crashed down amidst the ornamented tangle of a balcony garden. Lydran fell like a stone. His leap had carried him out across the void, but he could already see that he would fall short of the edge by several feet. "Thrown!" he gasped, as the bottom of his stomach dropped out and the metalwork tangle of the chasm wall rushed past his face. He hit hard and managed to grab hold of a nest of pipes that wound up the flank of a generatorum shrine. Snarling with frustration, Lydran scaled the mechanical cliff hand over hand, ripping jutting metal handholds from bare plasteel with his mind where they were lacking. The cultist would not escape him, even if he had to chase her through the entire throne-damned Hive City. The fingers of one gauntlet curled over the brink of the chasm, then the other. Lydran hauled himself upwards, then dropped again as a bullet sparked from the chasm's lip barely an inch from his helm. "Throne almighty!" he snapped. The quarry was persistent. He might have admired her, had she not been a murdering heretic insurgent. Instead, Lydran conjured a kinetic barrier about himself and hauled upwards again. Another shot whipped in and sparked from his psychic shield, instead of punching through his helm and into his brain.
"Heretic, cease your fruitless flight!" he roared. "Face righteous vengeance with some honour!"
The cultist ripped off her goggles and cast them aside. Her eyes glinted yellow and black in the hard daylight. Her auburn hair flew in the winds that rushed up from the Hive chasm, and her features were subtly altered from the human norm, clearly mutated in some fashion. Her expression twisted in angry defiance. The blood that ran from savage tears in her utility suit was a deep mauve, almost black.
"You are the ones without honour, imperial oppressor!" she spat.
And in that moment, Lydran felt, both through his powers and the sheer raw emotion in her voice, that she truly believed in the righteousness of her cause.
"You are the heretics!"
With that, she grabbed a second blasting charge from her satchel and flung it at him, limping across the roof garden towards a nearby doorway as she did. Lydran twisted his mind, and its kinetic field swept up and outwards. He struck the charge aside with the force of his will and sent it spinning away to detonate harmlessly in mid-air. Three swift strides brought him up behind the wounded sniper, who, realizing she wasn't going to make the doorway, spun awkwardly and tried to raise her rifle. The librarian backhanded the weapon aside and sent it spinning away into the bushes. His other hand pistoned out, catching the sniper around the throat. He hoisted her effortlessly into the air, her hands scrabbling for purchase on his ceramite gauntlet to no avail.
"Brothers!"
Lydran voxed across the Strike Force's command channel. As he did so, he fed the visuals from his autosenses to every other Imperial fist on Gaia.
"Vengeance!"
Then, with a twist of his fingers, he snapped the sniper's neck. He let the corpse thump to the ground and slowed his breathing. Lydran looked down upon the sniper as she lay upon the old pathway through the garden, one arm thrown out into an overgrown tumble of flowers, her inhuman eyes glassy. She was no threat to anyone now. Still, he felt a complex spill of emotions as he stood over the corpse and listened to the cacophonous bells of the Cathedrum Sanctificate pealing out the hour. She had fought hard, exhibiting a determination and stubbornness that he was forced to respect. She had looked at him with the hatred and revulsion that one reserves for the truly monstrous, and he had sensed the certainty of righteousness in her. Yet she was a mutant, a cultist, and an insurgent. Whether the product of an unholy worship or some foul alien influence, Lydran did not know.
"Perhaps the apothecaries will be able to determine more," he mused, and reached down to sweep up the corpse of his enemy and sling it easily over one shoulder. Then, deeply troubled by all that had transpired, Lydran sent out a runic summons for a gunship to attend him at his location. As he waited, he listened to the vox reports of his battle brothers flashing through the voxnet, and his disquiet grew. There was much to be done here, Lydran thought, and so much they didn't know.
Chapter 5.
116 dead, 352 injured. Clerks, adepts, merchants, artisans, clan nobles. The list goes on.
The voice of High Administrator Lunst was sharp as a whipcrack. Her every syllable dripped disapproval.
Disruption to processional transit routes and the flow of goods and the service throughout Commercia's Level Primus and Hive Spire has been and continues to be disastrous. The fiscal impact alone of this campaign of terror cannot be swiftly calculated. I must object to the conclave in the strongest possible terms.
Additional. Primary routes of transfer for refined ore from Inquisitorius to the Orbitus industrial docks have been severely disrupted,
chimed in Magos Gathabusis.
Though the Imperial Fists have been present upon Gaia for less than 3 days sidereal, I have cogitated that their ongoing martial operations have already led to a 42% drop in Inderium ore export per rotation standard.
My arbitrators have been reduced to little more than servitors, attempting to keep pace with the whims of these space marines,
barked First Arbitrator Verrill.
How can we maintain an effective grip upon law and order within Hive Angelicus if our authority is ignored and overruled at every turn?
Lydaran stood in the lower chamber of the Gyrish Conclave and listened to the furore above. The voices echoed down to him, each speaker more eager than the last to make clear the dreadful nature of their grievances, to highlight the outrageous disruption caused by the arrival of the Adeptus Astartes.
Would they be so forthright if they realized that we stood below, listening?
He wondered.
Pampered fools,
growled Chaplain Storn. He and Apothecary Lourdes had accompanied Nidoran to the Conclave Chambers, leaving a squad of intercessor battle brothers to secure the structure's entrances and approaches against possible assault. He supposed the building's defences had seemed adequate to the Gyrish, but then perhaps that explained why they were losing this war so badly.
They stand aloof, isolated from the people they profess to rule, and more concerned with maintaining the illusion of control, of normalcy, than with doing what must be done, replied Lydaran,
sub-vocalising to avoid being overheard by those in the chamber above.
They are frightened. They are only human.
They will not act to cut out the canker that is claiming their world, but instead rail against those with the strength to do so, muttered Storn. It is an insult to the noble sons of Dawn. Do these fools not understand who we are, what we have come here to do?
He made to stride forward, but Lydaran placed a firm hand on his arm to hold him back.
Doubtful, replied the librarian. Most of them have only known Space Marines as an oath-sworn honour guard, a handful of battle brothers bound by an ancient pledge to aid and protect the ruler of this world. They have not seen us free to act as we should.
They are in for a most unpleasant surprise, said Storn,
his white brows drawing down in a frown that tightened every scar on his face. Still, he allowed himself to be held back from storming straight into the upper chamber.
Not yet, though, Brother Chaplain,
said Lydaran, releasing Storn with a grateful nod.
There is a reason I commanded the chamber adepts not to herald our arrival. Let them speak a while longer. We know of these people, recognize their voices and titles, only from strategic inload. I would hear them speak unguarded. I would learn a little more of them.
Let us not lurk too long, then, said Storn,
sounding unconvinced.
Tarsian's latest report confirms we've secured Mercurio Gate as our base of operations, neutralized 4 nests of insurgents already, and commenced the late captain's projected pattern of expanding sweep and clear patrols. If all goes as the Primarch wills, we'll have Hive Spire secured within 2 days. We should be out there leading and coordinating our brother's efforts, not dallying here with fops and politicians.
Peace, Brother Chaplain. I understand, said Lydaran.
Do you?
Asked Storn.
I wonder.
You are Primaris, which sets you apart in the eyes of the more conservative warriors you now command. And you are a Psyker, which separates you from all of us. Our brothers loved their captain. Many of them do not even know you. You will earn their respect on the battle lines, not here. And mark my words, Slideran, you will need their respect if we are to win this. And we need you to win it. This is not a normal war. Tor saw that, and so do I. Do not make me regret supporting you in this.
Lydran shot a hard look at Storn.
I know of their battles. I have fought alongside them. If you believe me such an unfit candidate, Brother Chaplain, why did you follow my lead at the spaceport on the day we landed? Hastor is not the only one who thinks it should be you, not I, issuing the orders. I do not wholly disagree with him myself. I did not say I believed you unfit, Aster, replied Storn, his expression unreadable. Brothers, for men attempting to listen, you speak a great deal, commented Apothecary Lourdes. Perhaps you both need another tour of service with the 10th. Lydran scowled, wanting to press Storn further about his words, but knowing Lourdes was correct. He had already been aware of the prejudices that even his brother Space Marines were not above, both towards witches and towards the comparative newcomers amongst their ranks. Dawn's sons were traditionalists, stiff-necked and slow to change. All that he could accept about his comrades, even respect them for. But Storn, of all people, knew the mood and temperament of the battle brothers he served alongside. That was his role. And by all conventions of tradition and codex, the chaplain should have shouldered the mantle of command. So why, instead, had he pushed Lydran to take up the reins, only to hint darkly to him of his apparent unsuitability? Frustrated, Lydran took his concerns about Chaplain Storn and thrust them aside into the same dark space in which his grief for Tor festered. Both would have to be addressed soon enough, but for now he needed to focus.
"Ordered me around like a common soldier,"
High Marshal Callistus was saying, clearly shocked.
"I mean, I understand the authority they command, the power of them."
His voice trailed off for a moment, and Lydran thought that at least here was one who understood the nature of Dawn's sons a little better.
"Did you have a point to make to the Conclave, High Marshal?" asked Administrator Lunst, her voice arched. "Perhaps you were going to explain why our own Gyrish soldiery are still malingering in their barracks and fortifications while what appears to be open warfare erupts in the city's most valuable districts.
If these Adeptus Astartes intend to rampage thusly when they reach our mine complexes, I might question whether their help is really help at all,"
came a shrill voice that Lydran identified as belonging to Clan Lord Torfin Low Van Sappen.
"I, for one, might feel safer were they never to set foot within 100 miles of Van Sappen Mine."
Again, Storn tensed, made to move. Again, Lydran shook his head, and the chaplain glowered at him.
"Much as you yourself have singularly failed to do so since the fall of Mastraka Hive," barked Lady Almacia of Clan Tektos. "You should look to your own affairs before casting aspersions upon the angels of the Emperor." "You know very well, Lady Tektos, that the catastrophe at Mastraka has cut Van Sappen Mine off from Hive Angelicus altogether,"
exclaimed Lord Van Sappen.
"One cannot approach within 50 miles of the Hive's ruins without being exposed to the biopurge contaminant and the secondary roots."
"You're too damned cowardly to—"
interrupted Lord Dostos of Clan Delve. But Van Sappen overrode him, his voice climbing another octave or so in the process.
"The secondary routes, while suitable to maintain at least a token contribution to the ore tithe from my clan, are altogether unsafe and predated by both jungle and insurgents alike. I would be little use to my great clan were I to be strung up by separatists or swallowed by a drip fund."
there came the visceral sound of someone spitting, a couple of soft intakes of breath at the vulgar display. Then Lord Delve spoke again.
If it pleases the conclave, Lord Van Sappen might be a coward, but sometimes it takes a fearful man to speak the truth. I have seen vid capture of these space marines at work, and I submit to the conclave that they are less saviors than they are...
I would not finish that sentence, were I you, came a new voice, this one soft and calm, yet with sufficient steel to stop Lord Delve in his tracks. Lydoran searched his eidetic memory and came up with the man's name and vocal imprint. Bishop Lottimer Renwick, the voice of the Emperor's faith upon Gaia. Lord Delve began to bluster something, but Renwick cut him off, still speaking a little more than a murmur, but managing to fill the conclave chambers with his words nonetheless.
Were one to speak so ill of the Imperial Fist's Space Marine chapter, they, who are likened unto the angels of the Emperor himself, that soul might imperil themselves with accusations of the most grievous heresy, both of thought and of word. You would not wish to run such a risk, would you, Lord Delve?
Of course I would not. I am no heretic, replied Lord Delve, his reply sounding a little strangled. But I mean only to say that the method by which they have conducted themselves since their arrival...
has only been the beginning, finished Lydoran, striding up the ramp and allowing the voxponder in his armour's gorget to amplify his words to a solemn boom. He sensed heartbeats quicken in alarm, tasted the tang of adrenaline and fear sweat spiking in the air as the dignitary's entourage quailed and huddled close to one another. Lydoran came to a halt at the centre of the upper chamber's wide circular floor space. He tilted his head back and looked up at the regal figure of Governor Callistus the 21st, where she sat enthroned high above the gathering. She looked back with steely grey eyes, her gaze unwavering, even as her elderly seneschal goggled at him in alarm.
Gaia has failed in the eyes of the Imperium. In the eyes of the Emperor himself, barked Lydoran. Two of your three hive cities are lost. Many of your planet's mines have become hotbeds of insurrection. Those that remain are overrun by the jungle or your own rebellious subjects. The worship of false deities, the rot of rebellion and heresy, spreads its tendrils through your people. Your RBTs and planetary defense regiments between them could not even secure our landing zone, such that we could debark and begin operations without losing a valued hero of the chapter to one of your people wielding a weapon made on your world.
Lydoran let a flash of real anger show through at this last point, his voice rising to batter the gathered delegates.
Let them understand who we are, what we are, he thought. Let them realize that we represent a power that stands above their petty squabbles. By all rights, we could have bombed your world into naught but smouldering glass, added Chaplain Storn, glowering around at the assembled conclave. Understand that we did not discard this option because we are merciful. We are the living weapons of the Emperor, continued Lydoran, speaking into the conclave's shocked silence. We answer the distress call our battle brothers died to send. Our mission is to reclaim the infrastructure of this world, to eradicate all traces of false faith, and to restore the planet's proper function. Understand me. It is less than nothing to us whether you approve of our methods or whether handfuls of alleged innocents are caught amidst the crossfire of a war that you have permitted to spread within your walls. We do not care about your short-term quotas. We do not care about your sense of authority. We do not care about your politics. We do not care about you. This world is one bulwark within the Bastion Imperialis. We care only that its defences are shored, that its garrison is cleansed, and that it is restored in its capacity to serve and protect the wider Imperium and ultimately the throne world itself. Do I make myself clear, Governor Callistus?
Silence reigned in the conclave chambers for a full 3 double beats of Lydaran's twin hearts. Governor Callistus continued to look imperiously down upon him, the picture of regal composure. He imagined how he must look to her, small from such a height, yet still a giant, his bald and tattooed pate threaded with the wires of his psychic hood, his massive armour thrumming with quiet power. He supposed people normally looked cowed when they stood where he did now, and he wondered whether, privately, the governor revelled in her position of power over such supplicants, or whether, like the Adeptus Astartes themselves, she merely accepted it as a facet of her function within the wider Imperium. Slowly, Governor Callista struck her stave and pick together with a resounding clang. The sound echoed down to stillness before she spoke.
"We understand your position."
"Epistolary Lydaran, Governor," Lydaran supplied, his voice still stern.
"We understand your position, Epistolary Lydaran. Indeed, you have made it quite inescapably clear. We would have you understand ours. Gaia is a loyal world that has spent years uncounted, offering up its tithe without fail. Prime Clan Callistus has ruled over this world for more than 10 centuries, and we have, in person, overseen the governorship of Gaia for the last 116 of those years. Since dispatching our distress call, we have fought a most shocking and impossible war against a tenacious and unnatural foe that has turned our loyal subjects into unrecognizable heretics. It is a war that has cost us much, and yet you speak to us as though we have malingered in incompetence for the entire duration of the conflict. We have lost much."
She glanced down at the empty thrones of her fellow spire lords, Agnathio Trost and Renchi Howl.
"We would have you understand the worth, strength, and piety of this world and its people, Epistolary Lydaran. We would have the Adeptus Astartes approach us as allies and fight alongside us from a position of mutual respect."
"We do not require the respect of the Gyrish, Governor," answered Lydaran. "We require them only to understand that we will do what we must to save this world, and that any who oppose or hinder us are our enemies. Is this clear?"
"It is," replied Callistus, her tone cold.
He caught, then, the telltale tremor in her voice that revealed the tightly reined anger of one unused to being spoken to in such a fashion. Yet something else lay beneath it, another substrata he could barely feel, the slowly blossoming fear of realization.
"Then we have an understanding," said Lydaran.
He turned sharply and marched from the chamber, Storn and Lourdes at his heels. Behind him, for the first time in many years at the Gyrish Conclave, utter silence reigned. Within an hour of departing the Conclave chambers, Lydaran was aboard a gunship, amidst his battle brothers, en route to purge the next site. The armoured craft thundered through the arc-lit night, passing between glittering cathedral spires and swooping past the mountainous flanks of clan palaces that glimmered with thousands of lumen. Apothecary Lourdes sat on the restraint throne opposite Lydaran, poring over a data slate. Lydaran himself had used a portion of the journey to refocus his mind through meditation, resting his mental faculties and regathering the strength he needed to wield and control his powers. The burden of command was exhausting, he reflected. He had not truly appreciated Captain Torn's logistical abilities before now.
"Praise me," he said to Lourdes.
A fellow Primaris battle brother, Lourdes had blocky features and close-cropped blonde hair, and already boasted several scars that bespoke his commitment to tending the wounded, even under intense enemy fire. Now he looked at Lydaran over the top of the data slate and quirked an eyebrow. "Am I to be your seneschal now, brother librarian?" he asked. Lydaran heard the note of wry humour in his brother's voice, but was in no mood for it. He replied with a flat stare and held out one hand for the data slate. Instead of passing it to him,
Lourdes chuckled and shook his head.
Fortification of Mercurio Gate is now concluded. The Tech Marines have overseen the raising of 15 prefabricated bastion towers around the spaceport circumference, with a full spread of walls and stab lumen and artillery trenches to the rear. They have sequestered a number of adjoining structures for subsidiary support. Squad Hathlor have taken garrison duties and have co-opted a demi-regiment of Gyrish soldiery to fill the gaps.
What of the Conclave Chambers, the Governor's Palace and the Hive's Environmental Shrine? Asked Lydaran,
referring to the other sites that Captain Tor's plan had designated as priority strong points.
Work proceeds apace, replied Lourdes, quickly scanning the data slate.
In addition, Tech Marine Asphor has surveyed the defences around the Spire Core Transit Hub and primary turbolift sanctums connecting Hive Spire to Level Primus, Commercius and Orbitus districts.
Lydaran snorted mirthlessly.
He'll have found them all sorely wanting, no doubt, he said. I almost feel sorry for whatever Gyrish officers are in charge there.
He has indeed. He has ordered servitor crews and Hive labour gangs in to begin bolstering the defences to his satisfaction.
Hive Spire first, then Level Primus, said Lydaran,
repeating the mantra he had made of Captain Tor's plan of campaign.
Orbitus and Commercius follow, then Militaris and Acquisitorius. Those would both be troublesome Hive districts to properly secure, he knew, the former being the macro barracks of the Gyrish Airborne, and the latter the personal domain of the spider-like Magos Gathabosis.
Yet neither would present as much difficulty as the Hive's last, lowest, largest, and most lawless district.
Then, Laboratus, said Lourdes, his voice grim. Sprawling minor habs, gang territories, half-collapsed sump slums. Delightful.
Once that last district is declared sacrosanct, we will have our fortress, said Lydaran,
his tone inviting no dispute.
He would not waver from Captain Tor's plan. On that he had been firm, and Chaplain Storn had seemed to approve.
Lourdes grunted in what might have been assent. He scrolled through the pages of the data slate.
Shipmaster Gavorn continues orbital surveillance and air interdiction operations, he said. Continuing signs of unrest and guerrilla conflict around nearly every mine complex on the continent. Unclear at this time who fights on which side or which mine complexes truly remain loyal. A squadron of Stormhawks intercepted a hijacked ore bark 4 hours ago and shot it down before it could enter Angelica's airspace.
They know we're here now, whoever they are, mused Lydaran. We can expect resistance to become rapidly more aggressive.
Something of an update on that front, brother, said Lourdes, consulting a separate data psalm on his slate. Full dissection of captured enemies reveals a uniformity to the patterns of biological deviance, not concurrent with the effects of chaos worship. The local officio medicae have offered up their own findings, somewhat unwillingly, I might note, and they tally. This looks like a xenoform taint, brother librarian, concurrent with gene-stealer infestation. Picked capture of insurgent graffiti supports the theory. We're finding their so-called worm-form glyphs, daubed and sprayed within the walls of their hideouts, alongside all manner of profane, pseudo-religious literature pertaining to their idolatrous deity and this three-armed gunman known as Shen.
Father, said Lydaran,
gripping a stanchion absently as the gunship shuddered around him. The timbre of the engines changed. They were becoming into land soon. Lydaran knew a little of the gene-stealer menace, just what his psycho-indoctrination had taught him. It suggested that Father might well be the Xenos bioform at the heart of the cult, though the possibility remained that he was but a construct of mutated minds and twisted faith. Now was not the time to seek enlightenment. He clamped his helm over his head, muttering benedictions to the spirit of his psychic hood as he manually attached its clamps and feeds.
Give me the rest, Lourdes, and keep it brief.
Lourdes, his own helm secure and eye lenses glowing faintly, reeled off the remainder of the strategic update. Captain Tor's remains have been interred in a stasis crypt aboard the Wrathful until we can return him for proper entombment aboard the Phalanx, he reported. On the ground, the Servo Skull's swarms and Vanguard spearheads are pushing out through the last sectors of Hive Spire now, reporting back any suggestion of cultist holdouts. Everything points to this nest being the last major toehold they possessed this high up. But we must be thorough. If Sergeant Torgon had cultivated any agents amongst the populace, none have come forward since our arrival. So, we're relying on ours and the Gyrish sweep data.
And the Gyrish themselves? Asked Lydran, running last checks over his heavy bolt pistol and communing with the machine spirit of his force stave.
They are obeying our orders readily enough. Though beyond that, they have held stubbornly to their own patrol routes, garrison duties and combat operations. The High Marshal has made a point of dispatching additional Gyrish airborne regiments to Tektos Mine and Delve Mine in the last day sidereal, citing a need to suppress rebellion upon the Hive's very doorstep. This, despite our strong suggestion that he could tail such operations so as to have manpower ready for the next stage of our own operation.
He will be brought in line, said Lydran, feeling the gunship accelerate into a dive.
The lumen flicked to a deep crimson, and a ready chime tolled through the troop bay. Around him, battle brothers came to full combat readiness, chanting last oaths to Emperor and Primarch.
We will need the majority of the High Marshal's soldiery and the Adeptus Arbites too, if we are to successfully sweep the lower districts.
Indeed, Brother Librarian, but for now battle lies before us, replied Lourdes. One fight at a time, if you please.
Lydran barked a laugh.
Ha! Just so, he said, then switched to his assault force's command channel. Brothers, once again the heretic foe is revealed to us. They believe themselves safe in their fortress. Let us show them what the Imperial Fists make of such false hope.
His battle brothers cheered, though not, he thought, as they would have done for one of Captain Tor's rousing pre-battle speeches.
So be it, he thought,
feeling empiric power crackle through his stave on his command.
For that is not where my talents lie.
The gunship's landing gear hit the ground. The craft's guns were already hammering, their reports swelling suddenly from dull thumps to harsh thunder as the assault ramp slammed down and the Imperial Fists deployed. They had come down on a broad platform, maybe 500 feet across, that jutted shelf-like from the flank of a high-profile shipwright's tower. The platform was one of several that extended from the huge structure, each serving as a construction cradle and dry dock for the beautifully appointed artisan shuttles that the business produced. Servo Skull Orspec sweeps had detected anomalous movement and energy signatures on the 64th level of the tower. A brief discourse with the local Arbites precinct revealed that this floor, along with the four floors above and below, had supposedly been quarantined due to a shard roach infestation brought in aboard a shipment of materials from Downhive. There should have been nothing moving here, but when the Arbites communed with the building's enshrined machine spirits, they found all vid feeds from the quarantined levels severed. Even now, enforcers were tracking down the master shipwrights and as many of their artisans, serfs, and clerks as could be found. Meanwhile, the Imperial Fists struck hard at the suspected insurgent stronghold. Gunfire was already raining down from the arched windows of the tower when Lydran's boots hit the decking of the dry dock. Bullets and las blasts filled the air like storm rain, lashing the Space Marine's yellow armour and rattling from the gunship's hull. Ahead of Lydran and Lourdes, the intercessors of Squad Furion loped through a firestorm and took positions amidst the intricate mechanisms of a Hullright servo cradle. Their Stalker bolt rifles boomed as they returned fire, their shells punching through stained glass and plate steel with equal efficacy to detonate the cultists sheltering in the tower.
Heavy footfalls heralded brothers Victarion and Holan, each piloting an Invicta warsuit into battle. Behind them came the Terminators of Veteran Squad Lasordas, the first company veterans thumping down the assault ramp with deliberate strides before unleashing a fusillade of fire into the tower's flank. Engines screamed, and the gunship dusted off, ramp closing like a beast's maw as its prow swung up and away from the tower. Lydran saw a rocket, fired no doubt from some crude shoulder launcher, race from a window two floors up and slam straight into the armour glass of the cockpit. A fiery explosion blossomed, but as the gunship continued to climb, the smoke cleared to show little more than scorching and a few small cracks marring the aircraft's canopy. Heavy bolters swung to bear, and a storm of return fire blitzed from the craft's muzzle. Shredded metal, shattered glass, and gory remnants rained down. All that remained of the shooter and their firing position both.
"Go with honour, Brother Librarian," voxed the pilot serf. "We'll fly interdiction in case of reinforcements."
With that, the gunship dropped away and left Lydran and his warriors to break open the enemy fortress. Behind his helm's faceplate, the librarian wore a hard smile. This was the part of his duties that he lived for.
"Squad Furion, maintain cover fire," Lydran ordered. "Invictors, flank out and enfilade targets of opportunity. Watch for any enemy surprises."
It had not taken the Imperial Fists long to realise that, within the endless maze of conduits, vents, crawlways and tunnels that threaded the hive structure like an insect mound, their enemies might come at them from almost any direction. The knowledge hadn't altered their plans. The battlefield would bend to accommodate the Sons of Dawn, not the other way around. It had, however, made them wary.
"What of us, Brother Librarian?" asked Lordus.
"We will advance with Squad Lasordas and force the breach," replied Lydaran, highlighting a tall and ornately carved hangar door set into the tower's wall. "With your agreement, Veteran Sergeant." "We'll lead the way, Brother Librarian,"
voxed Sergeant Lasordas. He and his hulking battle brothers already advancing towards the designated doorway. Lydaran and Lordus fell in behind them, allowing the Terminator's massively thick tactical dreadnought armour to soak up the insurgents' fire. From a floor above, there came a rising scream and a sudden stream of shots that clanged viciously against the Terminator's armour. One of the mighty battle brothers stumbled as a lucky round broke through, but the indomitable warriors maintained their advance. Turning slightly, one of them triggered his shoulder-mounted cyclone missile launcher and sent a cluster of fragmentation warheads streaking away in answer to the cannon's fire. The detonation lit the night, and the cannon fell silent. Even as the Terminators raked their fire across the tower's flank, Lydran sensed a build-up of energy behind a window to the right of the doorway. He gripped his staff and focused his mind. In answer to his bidding, the deck plates of the platform shuddered, then ripped upwards, rising into a formidable barricade in the moment before a searing laser beam pulsed from the window towards Sergeant Lasordas. The blast hit Lydran's bulwark and melted the metal to slag in a blinding blast of energy. Lydran let the molten metal spatter back to the ground and levelled his forestave, snarling a wordless command as he channeled geokinetic energies through it. A force blast leapt across the intervening space and hit the tower's flank like a battering ram. The ores within the steel skin of the tower yielded to his fury and collapsed with an implosive bang, caving in the chamber behind and crushing the unseen assailant as though in a huge mailed fist.
"My thanks, Brother Librarian," voxed Lasordas stiffly. "Though doubtless my Terminator plate would have sufficed. So it has done for many long millennia." "The breach, if you please, Veteran Sergeant," replied Lydran, fighting to keep the irritation from his voice. Better the veteran's pride be wounded than his body.
Squad Lasordas had nearly reached the hangar doors, Lydran and Lordus cleaving close in their shadows. Brothers Victarion and Holan were pacing their warsuits back and forth upon the flanks, blazing away with heavy stubbers and heavy bolters to suppress the enemy's snipers, while Squad Furion added their own precision marksmanship. The tower's flank was a ragged mess of blast craters and broken glass. Several corpses, or what remained of them, hung from shattered windows, clad in more of those flak-enhanced miner suits that Lydran had seen on the sniper. Veteran Sergeant Lasorda stepped up, swung back his crackling power fist, and struck the hangar door. The blow landed with a concussive boom, the molecular disruption field that reaved his fist sending a rippling shockwave through the door. It caved in as though it had been made of parchment, its hinges bursting in showers of sparks and flying rivets. The entire sheet of plasteel, a good 20 feet high and at least as wide, leapt backwards from the blow and then keeled over with a resounding crash. For a breath, nothing moved within the darkness beyond the door, except sparks and swirling smoke. Then there came a wild howling, and from the gloom burst a ragged mass of cultists who fired pistols, flamers, and autoguns as they advanced. The sheer ferocity of the counterattack staggered Squad Lasordas, and another of the veterans cursed as a shot punched through his elbow joint to draw blood. "What drives these fanatics?" exclaimed Lordus over the vox to Lydran. "Nothing natural that could see our brethren given pause by mere mortals such as these," replied the librarian, sensing the latent psychic charge crackling on the air around the cultists.
"Brother librarian! Beware the rear!"
came Brother Holan's voice. Lydran shot a glance back, and his eyes widened as he saw more cultists swarming up over the lip of the dry dock platform, brandishing guns, blades, and bombs. They wore a motley assortment of clip harnesses and hive workers' servo rigs.
"Dawn's fist! They scaled the underside of the platform!" Lydran cried. "Squad Furion! Invictus! Repel assault to our rear!"
The trap had been well timed and well executed, he thought, with grudging respect. Against the Gyrish, it would no doubt have proved a deadly end to their assault. But he and his brothers were not the Gyrish.
"Brothers, eradicate them!"
he spat, before levelling his heavy bolt pistol and blasting a cultist's head apart. The enemy broke against the Terminators like a wave against rocks, and made almost as little impression. Improvised blades, cudgels, and pry bars rang against the Imperial Fist's armour to no avail. Crudely machined pistols barked, discharging hails of fire that might as well have been unleashed upon the uncaring face of a cliff. In return, the Terminators swung their power fists in unstoppable arcs, every blow not merely breaking its victim, but detonating them in showers of meat, blood, and shredded flak armour. Sergeant Lasordas and his brothers fired their storm bolters point blank, the shells hitting their victims so hard that many punched clean through the first rank of cultists, leaving fist-sized holes torn through them before detonating in the skulls and torsos of the next rank back. It looked, thought Lydran, as though the enemy had been fed into an industrial grinder. Then came the rising whine of electrical engines. Loping from the darkness of the hangar came another wave of cultists, but these were like nothing the librarian had seen before. Where their fellows might at least have passed for human at a cursory glance, the mutation of these newcomers were far more severe. They were bloated and hunched, their heads elongated and hairless, with bulbous yellow eyes and armoured ridges cresting their skulls. Though the creatures still wore rubberized utility suits, they had been heavily modified to accommodate the chitinous limbs that depended from their bulky bodies. In several cases, Lydra noted with disgust that there were three or even four of these arms to a single cultist, each ending in vicious claws that clutched heavy mining tools. He saw double-bladed cutting saws whose teeth whined with blurring speed, and massive rock drills whose whirring heads were surrounded by fine mists of jetting coolant.
Even Terminator Plate might struggle to turn aside weapons like those, he thought, and stood forward with his force stave crackling.
Veteran Sergeant, dispatch the last of the chaff, then aid me, he barked.
But then the mutants were upon him once more, and there was no further time for talk. Lydran dived aside from the downward swing of a power saw larger than his torso, its wielder hissing in rage as his weapon's blades bit into the decking instead of Lydran's flesh. The librarian answered by swinging the head of his force stave sideways into his attacker's head. Geokinetic force boomed, and the cultist's cranium detonated in a purple-black spray of ichor. Even as the first creature fell away, another two came at him, one stabbing with a screaming drill while the other hacked at him with a pair of curved metal swords. Judging the drill the more threatening weapon, Lydran turned, catching the downswing of the blades on his right shoulder guard while slamming the head of his force stave down atop the drill as it came at him. Another plosive bang of force sundered the weapon and smashed its wreckage into the decking, along with the severed ends of its wielder's arms. The cultist fell back with an insectile shriek, vital fluids pumping from its hideous wounds, and Lydran spun, sweeping his staff around in time to parry one of his other attacker's blades. The other slipped past his guard, an unexpected low lunge, and slid through the seal above his left knee pad. Pain lanced through Lydran's leg as the blade sank deep, and he responded by summoning a surge of kinetic force and then driving his helmed forehead into his attacker's face. The cultist's leer of triumph was transformed into a bloody smear as the librarian's charged headbutt caved in his skull and threw it back. He ripped the blade from his knee with his free hand and then threw it, increasing its velocity with another shunt of force. The blade whipped through the air and sank deep into the throat of a fourth cultist, who clutched at the weapon and toppled backwards, even as Lydran drew his bolt pistol and shot a fifth attacker thrice in the torso. The mutant exploded with a ripple of wet detonations, his innards